I could get angry as a manager and say, hey, you know, no, we're not going to, if you're going to come in here and be defensive, and, or I could try to understand what feels threatening for them in this space that they need to be defensive, and how have I contributed to that?
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Diana Kutaya. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Diana. One, she started her business as an entrepreneur coaching peace 10 years ago by leaving a well-paying job while believing in herself. Two, she got her start in education during crisis interventions in schools. And three, she was a basketball coach and athletic director and continues to use those lessons that she learned in sport in the work that she does today. Diana, welcome to Your Intended Message.
George, thanks so much for having me. I so appreciate being here. I really look forward to this conversation.
Diana, delighted to be talking with you and to hear more about the lessons you learned in sports teams and how that can apply to the workplace. And now, first of all, I'm curious about the crisis intervention in schools. Does that mean you were getting in trouble a lot?
I mean, that makes sense. It's a good deduction. We definitely 30 years ago looked at the behavior of young people very differently than we do now. We thought it was something to manage, as opposed to now thinking about it as communication and something to understand. So, you know, my journey started 30 years ago to where I am now in a lot of the work that we're doing with young people, really helping to understand, looking at behavior, their behavior as a form of communication, trying to tell us something. And it's our responsibility as adults and educators to figure that out, to really be a support for them.
And I suppose, you know, it's curious that when we examine a behavior problem or an attitude problem, it might just really fall back to a communication problem that hasn't been defined well, or a message that hasn't been delivered or received well. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think you hit on a good point there, George. I think one of the things to begin to think about when we think about behavior, whether that's behavior of a child, behavior of an adult, either way, is they are trying to communicate with us and let us know. And there is a reaction. I mean, we always say you can't change someone else, but you can change the way you interact with them. And that thus may change their behavior. I think it's really important for us to understand, if I'm a manager and I walk into a meeting with one of my employees and we're doing a performance evaluation and they come in and they are wildly defensive before I say anything, right? I could get angry as a manager and say, hey, you know, no, we're not going to, if you're going to come in here and be defensive, or I could try to understand what feels threatening for them in this space that they need to be defensive. And how have I contributed to that? And how might I approach this differently now that I have some understanding about how they are perceiving what we are doing? And I think that's really important for us to kind of recognize and understand, is that, you know, that connection and that communication becomes really important.
Diana, there's two points that I heard that I'd like to reinforce there. One, I heard that you can't change a person. You can't change another person. You can simply influence them in the manner that you communicate with them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we can, you know, it's, if you think about it, if you and I came in and every day we did a waltz, right? That was our greeting. You came in, we did a waltz. And I decided, right? And I didn't like the way you did the waltz. I wasn't really impressed with it. So I decided one day I'm not going to come in and do the waltz at all. I'm going to dance over here for a little while. Eventually, you can't do that thing that you did anymore. You can't do the waltz with me. So how do we interact with folks to kind of recognize and understand? You know, we often say you should communicate not to get across the point that you want to be heard, but communicate in a way that people can hear what you are saying. And that means that we have to understand somebody else. We actually have to take their perspective. We have to have some empathy in that space, right? It's if I was, you know, we do this with sports teams a lot. Am I going to throw the ball the way I want to throw it? Or am I going to throw it in a way that you can catch it? And that's my responsibility. As I am communicating, it is my responsibility to give you the information in the way that you can hear it, as opposed to just in the way that I want, which is why we say, don't communicate when you're angry. Right? Don't communicate when you're in that space, because in those moments, you are just going to say what you want to say, as opposed to saying what somebody else needs to hear in order to understand it.
Good reminder about the mistake of anger. I've noticed from my own experience, I never do my best thinking when I'm angry, and I never say the right things.
Yeah, I mean, and that is because oftentimes when we are angry, we are in a kind of state of high stress, and we're not using the part of our brain that's rational. We're not thinking about that. You know, we're in our emotional brain, and we're thinking in that space. And I don't want to send the message that emotions are bad by any means, because emotions are good and we should feel them. But how we kind of take a step back and say, whew, I need to take a breath before I engage in this, because we're never going to get where we need to go if I enter into it in this space.
Diana, as you know, this podcast is airing, both publishing both in audio and in video. And for those who might be watching the video, they might be wondering why you seem to be bobbing around.
Why am I swaying? Right, exactly.
It doesn't look like a waltz to me.
No, I am. I have a little treadmill under my desk, and it really is just a space. I think movement is medicine. And the more that we can move, even in kind of slow incremental ways, the better it is. I found myself sitting for a really long time, and I thought, it also just helps me think when I really need to do something that's, engaging. It helps me think, it helps me stay grounded. So I love moving. I'm doing only 1 mile an hour, so it's not even that fast, but feels fast.
Good reminder, especially for those who might be spending too much sitting at home, sitting during all these Zoom meetings.
Right. I mean, we really, you know, when we think about it, we've become a place where, you know, when we think about communication, we're everything is in this little box. We're all in this tiny little box, and we look at each other in these little boxes. And I think it's very easy to talk sometimes just to ourselves. Right? Depends which box you're looking at, and not make that really important eye contact and not look at people's body language and be able to see, where are they sitting in their seat? How are they sitting in their seat? I think that that's so important. I think you would probably be able to speak better to this than even I do, around the fact that when I want to communicate with someone and when we are communicating, it is a collaboration. We are watching and learning and understanding each other a little bit more. And that has become really hard on Zoom. We have to be super hyper-focused on folks and pay attention. We do a ton of trainings, and we always ask and invite folks to keep their cameras on. And we invite them to keep their cameras on because it helps us as facilitators really understand what message is landing? What message are people a little bit confused? Where have we lost folks? How do we kind of bring them back and keep them engaged? But also it's a way of connecting. When I can look in your eyes, when I can see you, when I can understand if you're nodding or you're nodding off, either way, then I have an understanding of what's going on. And that's been real hard in the virtual world.
Yeah, none of us were trained for this type of experience. We're learning as we're going. And you're right, it does make a difference the ability to see people and when you can connect with them, it makes a big difference. Diana, I'd like to delve more into the lessons from sports teams and how that can apply to the workplace. Where do you see the analogies, the strongest analogies?
Oh gosh, there's so many. I think the first of which is team, right? And how we kind of operate as a team. And I think one thing that we learn in sport that I wish we could really translate, and there are some businesses that do this really well, some companies that we've worked with that we have been so impressed with how they do this, is oftentimes we think about empathy only in the context of sadness or tragedy, right? Like when something bad happens, how are we empathizing with someone? How are we kind of being in that space with them? And I think one of the things that we learn in sport is empathy is also about connecting with someone else's joy. So when, you know, your teammate hits a last second shot and scores that basket, whether you win or lose, you think this is amazing. This is the best thing that ever happened. And there's this unbelievable amount of joy over their success. When I coached, you know, I would always say, if the other team makes a great basket, there are times I'll cheer them on. You know, I was a basketball coach. I'll cheer them on. If you did something, I am not going to not recognize greatness and good things that happen. I'm going to share. You have amazing joy. How do we do that in businesses? How do we celebrate each other's successes? How do we cheer folks on when they need it and also acknowledge them in those moments and not make it where it's adversarial or competitive in the way that we are using competition as a comparison, not a collaboration?
That must be a challenge because there are businesses where competition is the rule, especially among sales teams. Like, yeah, I'm not going to applaud when my colleague makes a sale because that should have been my sale, my commission. And so right. how do leaders overcome that or rewrite that, rework that?
Well, think about that, right? So if we always say, if you, this idea of kind of community care, the idea of collaboration. So if I have 10 folks on a sales team and I want them each to compete against each other to get the sales as much as we can, then of those 10 people, if I'm one of them, I'm looking out for me and I am responsible for all my success. So I am responsible for all the resources I need. I'm responsible for going out there, right? That's exhausting. And it doesn't feel very fun all the time. There's a high, high level of stress. What if we were collaborating and I wanted you to succeed, right? And you wanted me to succeed. And there's all 10 of us. Now I have 10 people looking out for my success, 10 people that are helping me get those resources. Hey, you know what? I've had an abundance of sales this month. Diana hasn't had nearly as many. Let's all go and support her. Now, you might say, well, yeah, but you're supporting Diana. You're losing all those sales, right? Absolutely. And when I need support, somebody's going to come and support me as well, right? So how do we create that reciprocity is you have to set the culture up like that. And if you've set the culture up differently, then it's like turning the tanker, you know, a tanker ship. Like it's going to take time, but there's a way to do that and to kind of shift the way you think about the work that you do. I'll give you an example. When we focus in sport on outcome, right? So I go into a locker room and I say, we're going to win this game. Winning is the most important thing. How do we win this game? And I focus on that outcome, right? I am not nearly as successful as if I go in that game and don't talk about the outcome, but talk about all the ways we are going to support. I want to get this many steals today. I want to see what our shooting percentage can be. I set all these little incremental goals and we celebrate them at all of those milestones. So when we think about sales, we're super hyper-focused on outcome and we're very, very not focused on process. How do we get folks to focus back to process and to communicate with each other in ways that really support each other? I mean, I want people to walk into a business and feel like they have a pep squad every time they do. Somebody's looking out for me other than myself.
Now, when it comes to teams, one of the lessons that I learned along the way is that you can play together and you don't have to like everybody on the team, but you can respect their ability. And that's bound to come up in the workplace as well, because we're not going to like everybody. Not everybody's going to like you. Get over it.
I think it's a matter of thinking about what does liking someone mean to you, right? Do I have to be best friends and hang out with folks and all of that, you know, on the weekend? No. But we do believe that, you know, oftentimes when we say we should respect each other, what we're saying is we should tolerate each other. And I think tolerance is the lowest bar, right? We want to get past tolerance. That's not where we want folks to be. So if you don't like folks, I think it's important to examine that and think about, like, why don't I like them? What about them do I not like? It may be our own implicit inherent bias that we need to counter or address. It may be that we feel a little jealous or threatened in that space, and we need to address some of that. There are things that potentially we have to address. We may not want to be best friends with folks and hang out with folks. That's different. But if we are kind of really like, well, I respect him, but I don't really like him that much, that you're never going to have success in that way. There's very few teams that I can say I've ever worked with that were very successful who had people who didn't like each other. I think that's something to examine if you see that.
Mm. You talked about the concept of teams. What other lessons can we take from sports teams to apply in the workplace?
That you are only as strong as your weakest link. So what I mean by that is, if you think as an organization you can hide folks who are struggling and overcome that, you are wrong. We have to raise all boats. We have to make sure that we are supporting everybody in order for us to be successful. You know, oftentimes teams will go into teams and folks on the bench will not be having a positive experience, and they really start to kind of become toxic within the team. And the coach will literally ignore them and not pay attention to them. And they're like, yeah, I don't worry about them because they're not playing and they're not impacting the game. And so, oh, they're really impacting the game. They are absolutely impacting the game because they're impacting the entire mood. They're impacting your energy. They're impacting the energy of others. And creating an atmosphere where some people feel like they don't belong is not an atmosphere where you can be successful. So how do we create spaces where everybody feels like they belong becomes so absolutely important. And, you know, George, I think one of the things that you probably have spoken about on this a lot is oftentimes we think about communication just in the words that we say, but actually communication is probably 90% of that is things that we don't say at all. So when we create an energy or atmosphere with a team that we are ignoring someone, that we are not paying attention to them, the energy that we bring in that space to them impacts the entire team. And I think that's another really important lesson that we learn in sports.
Be aware of the weakest link. Now, in any team, at some point, someone needs to make a decision about who should be on the team, who should remain on the team. And that's always a difficult event, usually not a difficult decision. But if we get past that and said, yes, this person belongs on the team, then we need to treat them like they belong.
Absolutely. I think also we need to, oftentimes we think about who needs to be on the team so that we can achieve a certain deliverable or outcome. And I want folks to rethink that. Who needs to be on the team so that this is a strong team, right? I might not have the greatest technical skills in, you know, if I'm in a technical job around it, but gosh, I really know how to rally the team up. And when I am in a room, I'm not saying me, but this particular person, when I am in a room, others just really light up and I energize the room. Well, that person may need to be on the team. So I think if we think about teams through the lens of people, of you know, like actual human beings, as opposed through to the lens of what they produce, then we are far better at constructing teams that are successful, as opposed to constructing teams that can just reach outcomes. Because eventually what will happen is when there is a challenge, that team will sometimes not be able to overcome that challenge.
Diana, you and your company, you work with organizations to help them build stronger teams within the workplace. Where do you tend to get the strongest resistance from these workplace teams who are not really teams?
Yeah, that's a great question. Gosh, you know, I think some of the resistance that we get is around change. We are creatures of habit. We like habit. We like routine. That actually is really good. We encourage people to set up routines within that, rituals, routines, practices within their organizations. But when we come in and we say, hey, this isn't entirely working for you, we need to make some changes around it. Sometimes we get a lot of resistance. You know, well, it works for me, so why do we have to change that? And getting that buy-in becomes the most important thing that we do. You know, we use play as a way of engaging teams. And when I say play, I mean literally play. We might, you know, learn to juggle or create a game that we play. Everything is, you know, we always make sure that everything is inclusive. So no matter if you have any type of physical limitation, you can participate in everything that we do fully. But we believe that when we are engaged in play, we learn those things that we want to change, those things that we want to highlight become less threatening. And we're able to engage that process and that way of thinking and that way of doing things differently, as well as creating some awareness of how I engage. Gosh, I'm doing this activity and I'm really struggling with this activity. Oh, I struggle with change. I struggle with the ability to be able to do this. So we really try to come to a place where people can begin to see those things in themselves. And we do not believe in this idea of what I call kind of shock vulnerability. You know, when we do team building, I don't want you to get to a place where you share all of the things that you think are flawed in you or all of the challenges that you have, and you have this vulnerable moment in front of all of your peers. We think that oftentimes we know because we've been doing this work for, you know, a very long time. Sometimes it's just the quiet moments that we sit back and we're like, oh, yep, I got that. Now I see that. And actually creating opportunities to have those quiet moments, creating opportunities to have that moment of self-reflection. When we do something, we'll always give people time and say, we're going to take 3 minutes. And I just want you to think about what that experience was for you. Think about that moment, write it down. We want to create that opportunity where people really can reflect on what has been done.
I'm hearing that if a leader wants to change the way their team does things and there is resistance, the leader can't say to them, well, you people are just afraid of change. You've got to learn to be different. The leader just can't say that. The leader's got to find a way to communicate to them so that each individual goes, why have I been fighting this? Let me think. What's in? And they've got to do it themselves. It's got to be that little voice in the head that goes, I finally get it.
Yeah, there definitely has to be those moments. There also has to be, you know, a lot of people resist change because it challenges their competency on things. So if I don't know how to do something, I am far less motivated to do it. And if you don't scaffold that, if you don't create opportunities where you ease me into something that's new, or you allow me, right? You create a workplace that's tolerant of mistakes when there is change, saying, look, we got to do this quickly and we're going to make a quick change and you're going to make some mistakes and we're going to work through that. Then that's oftentimes where I get resistant, because that's self-preservation. I don't want to feel incompetent in this. And if I am incompetent, then now my job is on the line, or I am, you know, going to look differently in front of my peers. And I don't want that. That's threatening. So how do we mitigate some of that for employees, I think, becomes really important.
Diana, people who might want to learn more about you and the programs that you have at Coaching Peace, they can find you at the website, coachingpeace.com. Now, like most all of us, we've been working virtually for the past 2 years. At some point, it's going to be necessary. It's going to be necessary to get back in person with people. And I believe you've got some programs in place that can help make that more productive and more enjoyable. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think you're spot on, George. What we're doing now is we're really redefining what work looks like. And there's going to be an adjustment period. We're going to figure it out. Some employers are going to want to come right back, you know, to campus and right back to, and they're going to struggle with that. And there's going to be, you know, kind of this transition period. I think many businesses are going to create a hybrid model where they are going to be remote most of the time. I think we found that really does work for people. Where it doesn't work all the time is being in community with people, being in physical spaces with people is really important. We're social animals. We connect with others. We learn things about each other that we otherwise wouldn't know just by being on a screen. So what we're doing is actually creating partnerships with resorts, and not, you know, we've got some pretty good resorts. We've got all good resorts, but I mean, we've got some pretty expensive ones and not expensive ones, but we're trying to create those partnerships so that actually when you want to do an offsite, we can curate that kind of team building experience through a variety of different things, whether that's a space where there's beautiful views, where you can have, you know, your meetings and do your meetings and all of our team buildings with amazing views in the background. Or you might want to be at a space where there's, you know, axe throwing or mini golf or, you know, frisbee golf or something along those space. You might want to be in a space that has an amazing, you know, artwork that's there. We want to create spaces where when people come together, they're in a place where they can take a breath and it doesn't feel the frenetic energy of work, 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 but it actually feels like, oh, we're in this space of calm. We actually can be in that best part of our brain where we can think and feel and really engage with each other. And that's what we're trying to do. Once we get to a space where we really can be in person even more, which I am hoping and praying is very soon for all of us, you know, we know that there's gonna be a need for that.
Mm. Diana, in wrapping up, let's imagine you're back in your role coaching basketball, and it's before a game, perhaps a critical game. What one, two, or three pieces of advice or encouragement might you give to your basketball team that a workplace leader could also apply in the workplace?
Well, you know, I think one of the most important things is to let everybody know that you care about them, not just their output, right? So letting them know, like, you matter in this space is really important. And that building those relationships. So checking in with people is really valuable. A simple check-in. How are you doing? Where are you at today? Letting them know I'm here for you in that space. I think the other thing is to set people up for success. You know, if I am a coach, my responsibility is to facilitate the performance of others, not to take credit for it or to shame them for it. It's to facilitate it. So if I am thinking about how am I going to set you up for success today, what resources have I given you? What resources haven't I given you? How might that translate to your ability to perform or not perform? I think that becomes really important. You know, if I was a basketball coach now. I'm not, but if I was now, although I wouldn't mind being, but you know, when I walked into halftime and I said to my team, you're really not performing well. I just don't understand. You're not performing well. You're not doing well. And never took responsibility for anything that I did. You know, as a coach, I should walk into that locker room, and I would love to meet a coach who does this and say, all right, before we begin, come up with 3 to 5 things I could have done better. Where have I let you down today as a coach? What are the ways in which I didn't set you up for success? Or you just open the floor and allow the players to tell you what that is. There's something valuable around receiving that feedback and knowing, oh, I'm part of the team too. Right. So I think that's another thing. How do you set them up for success? And what resources have you given them? What have you done? And do you do an analysis and evaluation of that in an honest way, as opposed to just, I rolled the ball out, I gave it to them, it was theirs to do. Nope. You had some responsibility in that.
Good reminders for leaders and coaches. My guest today is Diana Kutaya, reminding you that it's when it's your turn to throw the ball, you don't throw the ball the way you want to, you throw it the way that they can best catch it.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.